In this episode, we discuss White Out, the film invented by Mike Nesmith's mother. Hey everyone, and welcome to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Elliot Kalin in the number two seat this time.
And I'm Amanda Melson, special guest announcing myself.
Wow. Amanda, welcome back.
Thank you.
You were here once before when Stuart was here.
That's true.
And now you're back when Elliot's here. Mm-hmm. Elliot, who's much more of a gentleman than Stuart.
That's true. I don't know if I'd say that. I'm a gentleman, but he's a ladies' man.
Uh-huh.
So... He has a way of charm about him, whereas I merely have a base level of politeness.
Yep.
I'm glad that that's the only thing you base the way you treat me on. It's just your level, how you treat all women applies
the
to
same.
Me.
Yeah. with a professional courtesy.
Thank you.
That's the way
Thank
I treat you, the way I treat my fiance, the way I treat my mother.
Despite the fact that you actually... have known Amanda for quite some time, unlike Stuart, who was just meeting Amanda when we did a podcast together.
We've all known each other for a while.
That's true.
You know what, guys? Let's not talk about a movie. Let's just reminisce about Sarah Schaefer's Obsessed with You.
Ah, good
and the
old times.
Days of Juvie Hall Theater.
Let's reminisce about a failed New York alternative comedy theater.
It only failed because it didn't make money, Dan.
Yeah, that's so, not a failure.
Creatively, it was a hit. Well, except with the audiences.
Well, on those standards, it's just as successful as any alternative New York comedy theater ever.
There you go.
Like, even the successful New York comedy theaters lose money on their actual shows. The only way that they make any money is by charging people to learn how to do comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, we should have done that.
Yeah, I know. And those people become a source of free labor, too.
Mm-hmm. If any people had come to see any shows at that theater, we could have enticed them into learning how we did it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Taught them lessons in comedy stuff.
Yeah, the first lesson we would teach them would be taking their money.
Here's your money. Say goodbye to it. Come back next week with more money.
That's going to be the next 10 to 20 years of your comedy career. Anyway.
Really, 20 years?
Well,
so you're saying the average comedian works for 20 years without making a profit?
Profit? Yes, probably. I've been at it for 8, so I'm just giving myself
years
a wide
to go,
margin.
And then the money's going to come in.
Yep.
By the time you're in your mid-50s... Uh-huh. You should be making upwards of $26,000 a year.
That's when you get your pension.
Your comedy pension, that's true.
Once that kicks in, you're sitting pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I've been paying in every year, so...
To who?
Some guy.
Gilbert Gottfried?
Yeah. Yeah.
The voice of the Shoedini? Have you seen... Okay.
I know he's the voice of the Affleck Duck.
No more. He may not be.
Oh, well, I know he's the voice of Iago in Aladdin.
Well, that will be forever.
Yeah.
They can't change that. But I saw an ad for the Shoedini, which is a device that old people use to put their shoes on.
I assumed it's some sort of wish-granting shoe.
No, it's like a stick with like a little pincher at the end of it. So that you can just pinch the back of your shoe and slip it onto your foot without bending over.
So basically it's like a version of those things that have like plastic sharks and like
and
other creatures.
And dinosaur heads on them.
Yes.
Or robot
Except
arms.
For
yes.
Shoe based.
But it's like, do you need help putting on your shoes?
Gilbert Gottfried is in a production of My Fair Lady.
Yes. That was my best Gottfried. Yeah.
And it's named after Houdini, who of course was famous for putting his shoes on
without bending over.
People used
that
to
was
come,
the amazing
people
thing.
Used to come from miles around to see how he put his shoes on.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the '80s, Gilbert Gottfried specialized in introducing things where women took their tops off,
mm-hmm.
and now he's specializing in ways that old people can put their shoes on.
I suppose an old person could take their top off with a Houdini.
They could doff their top.
Yeah.
So that's all a long way around to saying that we watched a movie tonight that was called Whiteout.
Mm-hmm.
Starring...
Oh, Whiteout!
Well, not the way you're doing it, actually. It's pretty...
Everyone's watching to see what you will do. Right? That's the song?
Right.
I don't...
That's multiple.
You know, that's that Whiteout song?
That's twice the royalties now.
That you have to pay. Cha-ching. You're welcome, ASCAP.
So, Kate Beckinsale was in this film.
Yes.
Everyone, America's sweetheart, Kate Beckinsale.
America's English Rose sweetheart.
The actress that Amanda turned to us and said, what else has she been in?
Well, to be fair, most of her movies have involved vampires and werewolves.
Yeah,
so.
Well, you're married to a guy who co-wrote a book about werewolves, so you should be more familiar with Kate Beckinsale than either of us. If you took any interest in your husband's life.
Obviously she doesn't.
yeah, like, she. All I know is she wasn't in Twilight or Twilight New Moon.
But that could describe... the vast majority of actors.
A very small percentage
all
of actors.
All actors fall into two categories. In Twilight or Twilight New Moon or not.
You're saying that if you watch any vampire werewolf movies, you'll know who Kate Beckinsale is. But
well,
I'm saying I've watched two of those movies.
Good point.
She wasn't in either of those. So
right, fair enough.
I don't know what it takes to smoke Kate Beckinsale out of her home. But apparently, you got to go to more than two vampire werewolf movies. What has she been in? Seriously.
She's been in the Underworld series.
Never heard of it.
She was in Van Helsing.
Nope.
Earlier in her career.
Which also has vampires and werewolves in it.
Yeah, she was in Cold Comfort Farm, which has no vampires or werewolves.
I haven't seen it.
It's a fun movie.
Serendipity with John Cusack.
Oh, I saw that!
That's when, you know what that is? That's when fate has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
When fate is stupid.
That's what, yeah.
I saw that movie.
Yeah,
it's one of those movies where the screenwriter decided to have the characters throw huge roadblocks in the way of their own happiness.
Actually.
Yeah, well, it's a movie loosely based on a dessert restaurant, so...
Loosely based.
I mean, they go there in it.
50% of the film is their famous frozen hot chocolate.
Really, 50%. So if it's an hour and a half film, 45 minutes of the running time is that.
So I'm more interested
in
how frozen hot chocolate is physically possible than I am in anything that happened in Whiteout.
Serendipity, Dan.
You know, there was a bit of foreshadowing in Serendipity. Foreshadowing for the movie Whiteout.
Explain.
Because wind plays a part.
The important thing about Serendipity is that
when fate has a sense of humor,
she loses a glove, and John Cusack finds her glove and gives it to her.
Oh, snap.
And you know when she could have used a glove?
When she was out in Antarctica in Whiteout.
In the movie Whiteout,
because she lost her gloves and she ended up losing two fingers as a result.
Yes.
Yeah, so...
should we tell the...
We should tell the audience...
What story there is to this stupid film?
Yes, please.
Not to be biased or anything. Whiteout tells the tale of Kate Beckinsale, whose name I don't remember in the movie, so we'll call her Kate Beckinsale, who is the U.S. Marshal who is stationed at the Antarctica Research Center, I guess in case there's a crime that takes place in mm-hmm. Antarctica. She's just about to leave. She's a day away from leaving for somewhere else. And the reason she was at Antarctica is because she had some trauma in her past involving an arrest she made in Miami.
Also involving a cute vest and sleeveless top.
Yes.
And when you have a traumatic experience in a place known for a certain type of weather, you have to go to a place that has the exact opposite type of weather.
Exact opposite type of weather, exactly. So they would, what was I saying? Okay, so she's about to leave. Her only real friend there is Doc, played by Tom Skerritt, who is a doctor. A body's found out in the middle of nowhere. How could it have gotten there? And it was a murder. And mm-hmm. this discovery leads her on a trail of intrigue and adventure. And eventually it turns out it's like a diamond smuggling operation.
Yeah.
The way, she's attacked by a man with an ice axe, and she has to open up the door of a place when it's really cold and her gloves aren't on, and she loses her fingers as a result.
Now, Elliot, is it a diamond smuggling operation, or is it that this has something to do with the prologue, where it happens in 1957, and there's a Soviet plane that someone starts shooting on it for reasons that are not apparent at the time, and the plane crashes.
Reasons that yes. are never apparent.
It's never apparent. There's a Soviet plane that's carrying diamonds over Antarctica for God knows what reason. And one of the guys starts, I guess the pilots have decided to steal the diamonds, so they start shooting up the plane, everyone dies and the plane crashes, and then 50 years later, these diamonds are rediscovered by mm-hmm. somebody, and someone else gets them, and then some people decide to do something with them somewhere. And this somehow leads to other people dying, and something ends up going on, and Kate Beckinsale wanders around in the snow for a long time, and then it turns out it was Doc, and Doc kills himself.
So you would call these diamonds the MacGuffin?
I would call them the McCrappin.
Wow.
Because this is not a good movie.
Crass. So, yeah. Yeah, no, it's your typical whodunit set on Antarctica. Yeah.
Sort of, except there's a lot of who cares whodunit.
How so?
I mean, Amanda. Just a body mysteriously appears, I guess,
mm-hmm.
in Antarctica. But I don't know. I mean, they don't build up a lot of suspense. You don't really care.
Well, part of the problem with this movie, and I don't know whether it was because, DVDs are mixed in a weird way or my sound system is weird, but they put a lot more emphasis on making sure you could hear the wind than any of the dialogue that actually transpired. Just as in the final scene of the film, they put more emphasis on the fact that there was a blinding white snowstorm.
As opposed to telling you which of the snowsuit-clad figures is who when they're all fighting.
And the ones you can dimly see as gray shapes through the snow.
Yeah. I think they really thought people were excited about snow. And that, and I think they missed their chance, because this year snow was very big.
Yes. Yeah, maybe that's part of the problem, actually. Maybe if we had seen this movie, in October, we would have thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
Look at them! They three identical figures in the carcass snow that we can barely see through some snow.
But yeah, it's not a well-made movie. And the emphasis seems to be on keeping the audience from understanding what is going on at any given point.
Yeah.
Yeah, and okay, so there's a character who is in grave danger who calls Kate Beckinsale.
Yes.
From an alternate...
There's another area that was a Russian camp. And the research camp, and there are some geologists who are there who are pulling ice samples out of Antarctica. And one of them calls Kate Beckinsale and says, "Come over here and you'll understand everything."
And when she's like, "What's going on? Just tell me." And he's like, "No, you have to come over." And she says, "No, really? I would have to go through a whiteout blizzard."
And a whiteout is a blizzard.
On the South Pole to get to you.
Yeah.
And he says, "No, you have to come over." And then she comes over and he's dead.
And there's a guy with an ice axe who tries to get
him. Why wouldn't he just tell her, "Oh, there's a murder"?
Well, Amanda, diamonds are something you really need to see to understand.
Yeah, they're forever.
You could physically be in the presence of the thing that's...
Those were big diamonds when we see them. They're uncut. Do you know how many 2 month salaries it would take to buy all those?
God,
a lot.
So many.
Yeah.
A lot of kisses are going to begin there.
Yeah.
Inside that dead guy's sewn together calf.
Full of diamonds.
Every kiss begins there.
Yeah. And also, Antarctica. And also, Elizabeth Taylor would point out that these have always given me luck. Meaning white diamonds, of course.
Yeah. And she would pull white them out from diamonds. Her own
She'd calf. Pull them from her own ear.
Because you see, Tom Skerritt had been sewing uncut diamonds into dead people's
bags
flesh.
Of them.
Yeah.
In order to smuggle them out somehow, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
The whole thing, the movie is very uninterested in the movie. And
yes.
It's almost like it's trying to lull you to sleep. It's like an action movie that's trying to lull you to sleep to see if it can defeat you,
Yeah.
It's like staying awake is a challenge that the movie has thrown, a gauntlet the movie's thrown down.
Well, it takes a long time for the parka-clad ski mask.
Parka and recreations clad.
Yeah. the ski mask wearing killer with his ice hammer or whatever, like the
it's like an ice axe, I think.
Yeah. So he's like the slasher in this film. It takes a long time for him to actually show up in the movie.
He's really only in like two scenes.
And then they use him very sparingly.
Yeah.
And then he's almost immediately unmasked as being this goofy Australian guy.
Yeah.
Who is completely non-threatening without the mask and axe.
What was he doing there? How did he get there? Well, see, these are things you would think
He's one of the pilots who works at the research station.
And so how did he know about the diamonds?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, he was with the group that found the Russian plane that had the diamonds in it, I think.
So if a group of geologists sees a bunch of diamonds, they immediately go apeshit and start murdering each other with ice axes.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. I was almost wondering if, like, the Russians were carrying, a meteor that drives people crazy or something like that. Like, because it seemed whenever people got around it, they would go into, a murderous rage of some kind, which almost makes, more sense. It makes more sense to me that we'd be watching a movie about a rock that brainwashes people and makes them go crazy than about diamonds where everyone is just like, diamonds!
Well, that's sort of what I'm saying. Like, everything ends up being less interesting than it is. Like, you're introduced to this axe-wielding figure, and then he's almost immediately demystified as a goofy Australian.
Yeah.
You think that maybe there'd be some crazy explanation. Like, no, it's just uncut diamonds. And then at the end, I kind of admire that the movie doesn't have, a big, stupid action ending.
Yeah, there's no explosions or anything still, in that scene.
At the end, it's kind of like, well, we've uncovered that it's Doc, Tom Skerritt. Now, Tom Skerritt is going to do the noble thing and walk into the blizzard and die.
It's just like the end of Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, the Alan Moore Superman story.
Sure it is.
Where he literally walks out of his base on Antarctica, seemingly to his doom, as punishment for killing Mr. Mixupilic.
Yeah. Except for he doesn't kill himself.
No, but he's exposed himself to kryptonite that supposedly would kill him.
Hmm.
That supposedly he doesn't have his powers, so he'd die in the cold. Really, that's not what happens.
I'd rather see that movie.
Well, it's a really good comic. I recommend it.
Oh, it's a comic.
Drawn by Kurt Swan,
I'm not
going to
read a comic.
You're married to a guy who wrote a book about werewolves.
Still have sex, all right? I'm not going to start reading comic books.
But
by the way, when my
it's
husband...
It's true, we don't reproduce. We don't...
No.
When my husband sexually, proposed to me and offered me the diamond that's currently on my finger, I immediately swung at him with an ice axe.
Wow, no. That's the fake diamonds I owe people.
Anytime you're around diamonds.
And
you could be a mild-mannered geologist.
He handed you a man's calf, and you opened it and found a diamond ring inside.
Yes. Yep.
Here's something that I wanted to talk about a little bit. I said this during the movie itself, that I feel... There's two obvious ways you would go with this story.
You would not do it.
You would say,
or you would make a shitty
movie
out of it.
No, I'm Kate Beckinsale. Show me a better script. One where I raise my voice at least once.
One where I don't spend the movie flying from one place to another through snow.
Kate Beckinsale, by the way, not complaining, but introduced in a movie about wearing a lot of clothes, slowly taking her clothes off, and then taking a shower.
Yeah, well, there should have been more of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the exploitation instinct that this movie, unfortunately, suppressed for the rest of the film.
It's almost like they thought they were making a classy movie, but really they were making a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
So they were like, listen, we'll make it really atmospheric, real quiet. You know, we're not going to draw attention to the unseemlier elements of this movie about murders over a diamond robbery. But instead they should have done that, you know.
Yeah, but no, the two ways that I'm talking about is, if you're going to have a film about a U.S. Marshal solving a crime in Antarctica.
And why wouldn't you have that?
It's not a bad setup. It's an interesting setup.
No. Well, tell the two ways you would do it.
I would either do it by there's no law force down in Antarctica, because why would there be?
It's like the Wild West.
There probably is, and that's where they base this on. They probably, someone heard, Antarctica has a U.S. Marshal for some reason. Let's set a mystery there. But most people would think, of course there's no police down there, so let's have a murder happen down there, and then we have to send someone who's not used to being in Antarctica.
So it's like Insomnia.
To solve this crime. Exactly. Or you go the other way, and you have a cop who works there because, you know, maybe they're a scientist, maybe they don't want a really, like, taxing job. Yeah,
I like it. Science cop.
Yeah.
But he's not
that movie.
Scientific cop.
He's not, like, a gritty.
She does use science to solve the crime. She looks up a series of printouts that say science on them.
Yeah.
And then she
have X's right next to them.
If X's, she looks up the words that don't have X's next to them, and the word is science, and she uses that to find the bodies with the diamonds. Right. It makes as much sense as what I've just said.
And then she compares the sutures on the bodies to the sutures on her three-fingered hand.
Yeah.
Because Tom Skerritt just chopped off two of her fingers. He was in Top Gun.
Right.
And Alien. No, but the point. So you were saying, Dan.
No, I was saying that, like, you'd have a cop who is not used to actual crime because they're a cop.
You'd either have someone who's not used to Antarctica and is dealing with that, or a cop who's out of their league because they're not used to solving crime.
Right. It's what, you know what, you're screening The Taking of Pelham 123 tomorrow, too late for the people, or
on
not
Wednesday.
Tomorrow, Wednesday.
Well, maybe if you put this up today.
I'm not putting it up today.
We'll put it up tomorrow. Well,
it goes up on the weekend, like it always
does.
It
will have screened on March
3rd. It will have screened, but the point is,
go back in time and see it.
You have Walter Matthau there, is someone who's a transit cop who's not used to dealing with terrorists, and that's what makes it.
He doesn't know how to negotiate.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You know, like a guy who's above his head, but is dogged and intelligent and makes it, you know, like solves the case.
As opposed to someone who's brought in murderers before, but is boring and stupid, and also has been living in Antarctica for, I don't know, 80 years by this point.
Yeah.
She has trauma because she keeps flashing back to her last case back on the mainland, where she was in Miami.
Bienvenidos.
That's how they say it.
Si.
And she and her partner captured a criminal of some kind. They never explained what he did or who he was.
Well, he did have a threatening goatee.
Yes, and he looked vaguely Hispanic. And her partner set
so
it up.
So drugs is what you're saying. Drugs, right?
I have to assume so. And she was attacked by the criminal because her partner had been bribed to let him escape and possibly kill her in the ensuing madness.
Right.
But she has managed to, she subdues the criminal, and her partner pulls a gun and she shoots him so that he falls out of an open window.
Well, but let's not gloss over this. This was what was really funny to me, is the bad guy bribes the other partner to let him go, and then the bad guy goes into the bathroom alone to slam her face into a mirror. And Kate Beckinsale is able to overpower him. And then she exits to find her partner talking on the phone, being like, "Officer, down!" Like, the partner didn't go into the bathroom to make sure that this went down correctly. Like, didn't go in to check to make sure that she was actually dead when she was supposed to.
Well, the way you do it, too, is that you have the person beat you up, and then he escapes. And you say, like, "Oh, I couldn't stop him. He took me, you know. I turned away for a second, you know, so there's an alibi. Not an alibi, so that your other partner doesn't get killed or have the shit beat out of her. And so while you're standing there with a walkie-talkie going, "Oh, I don't know, he escaped." When you buy a new car or a big screen TV, there's that much less suspicion on you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That makes sense.
But she, every time she sees like a bullet wound or anything, she flashes back to this event. And there's a scene where she's sleeping. She's just fought off the guy with the ice axe for the first time. And she manages to get back inside. They're fighting in the snow. She gets back inside, shuts the door so he can't get in, and passes out. And then she flashes back to Miami and to the fight she just had seconds ago. And we see it in brief, you know, all in brief flashes again while she is in bed going, "No,
it's the fight so nice they showed it twice."
But not even like spaced apart, you know.
Yeah, immediately afterwards we get a recap of what just happened, but interspersed or intercut with her Miami fight.
Her Miami adventure.
So that we understand, she's not that good at being a U.S. Marshal.
Yeah, there's a reason they sent her to Antarctica.
Yeah,
she has never had to do anything.
Then also there's a scene where where's that guy from? The nice guy? No, the other guy.
From the UN.
The UN is like, "Well, you know, I'm here investigating because, you know, we've never had a murder
in Antarctica
before.
This could become an international incident somehow."
As if, like, all of a sudden, there are going to be tons of murders. And it's like, well, Antarctica is a really bad neighborhood now.
Oh, yeah.
Well, per capita, Amanda, per capita.
Yeah, right.
It was terrible.
But, yeah. And the...
it was like genocide.
I'm not surprised they sent the U.S. Marshal to, who isn't very good, to the station, because the research station doesn't seem to be very good at being a research station. Everyone, we constantly see people just kind of hanging out. There's a band in Hawaiian shirts that's always playing in the hallway of the research station. It's like an episode of Scrubs.
They pour a bunch of booze into glasses, getting most of it on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, like,
always bothers me in movies, by the way. I'm like, come on, it's perfectly good alcohol that you're just tossing around because you're showing that we're party animals here.
Yeah, if you were in that scene, you'd be like, no! You'd be licking the floor to get the booze.
I'd be crying.
Yeah. And
they're using ice samples ice in the glass.
Million-year-old ice samples.
They're, like, serving chips out of a mastodon.
Yeah.
Well,
that happened. Yeah.
Well,
there's
like
those people who found a mastodon and they ate it.
Well, it's like how...
and apparently, I don't think it was very good. But.
It's like how New York tap water is supposed to be good because of all the tiny crustaceans in them.
Is that what does it? Because it is great.
Yeah.
It is the best-tasting water in the world. Mm.
So, there you go. Same thing.
Delicious.
With old ice.
Oh yeah, old ice is full of crustaceans. But it's just like it's supposed to be a research station, but it's like full of weird computer displays that don't show you, just show you nothing but maps or like really old fashioned like green on black type. And then there's people just hanging around in shorts and t-shirts partying. Like,
in the beginning, there's a group of streakers for no reason.
Yeah, through the middle of Antarctica.
Yeah.
And it's like there's a scene where Tom Skerritt is trying to teach these guys how to survive in the cold, and they're not wearing enough coats. And he's like, oh, your core temperature has dropped by 97 degrees by now. You're losing motor functions. Like, you're going to die in a little bit. I'm going to teach you how to survive. But we've just seen like a bunch of guys run naked through Antarctica. So it's like,
yeah.
Wait a minute. How could they do it? You know.
Well, they're pros, Elliot.
I guess so. Yeah, they've got a tough outer shell of skin that keeps the warmth in. I will say that Tom Skerritt is pretty good in this movie. He's very quiet.
I always like to see Tom Skerritt get work.
Yeah.
So we can good work, Whiteout.
Thank you for giving Tom Skerritt a paycheck, Whiteout.
Yeah.
Did we have any other stupid things?
Well, we're talking about how like you brought it up a little bit with the computers, like how all the computers in the movie either seem to be like, you know, like old, like Commodore 64 style, green on black or whatever, or it's like the at the end, Kate Beckinsale sends an email, and after she sends it, there's a big green check mark that covers about a third of the screen that says sent, and do filmmakers not realize that there are personal computers in every house these days?
Maybe
like, people
that's
use them.
Email program that we just don't. Maybe that's how Net Zero works.
That's, yeah, or like FiOS. Is
yeah.
that
it?
It's like
cable?
Juno.
It's
Juno.com.
It might be like large print email for like people with bad eyes.
Or like Antarctica mail.
That's true.
But
you said that as if it was pun, but there was no pun.
No, there was nothing. It wasn't even two words combined into
you
one.
Just,
it was both words.
You just put a pause.
In the wrong place. But you see it in movies a lot, like, or like in, I remember it when I Know Who Killed Me, when we watched that, like, mm-hmm. it showed that you're using a web search and like in a way that doesn't make sense, and the way computers don't work, like, it's almost like, yeah, they don't trust people to know how computers work.
Yeah, there was that scene in, what was it, Dragon Ball, no, not Dragon Ball, it was
D-Wars?
The...
Dragon Wars?
Shoot, which one was it?
I didn't
it?
See Dragon Wars.
Chun-Li.
Oh, Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
Where someone does a
Street
search.
Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li. It would have been a very different movie. Instead of Chun-Li, it's Chum-Li.
There's a scene where they don't know someone's name, but they do a search for her, apparently,
with
via
her
face.
Well, there are some apps that can do that now.
Yeah, but they didn't have, like, a photo of her. Like, I don't know, like, where did they get the photo in the first place?
Yeah, that's true. It seemed to have been that they remembered what her face looks like, and they did a search off of that.
Wow.
They did a description of
her. Can you just draw a sketch into your computer and have it look up that face?
I guess so. It would be pretty cool.
That would be good.
Well,
you could
thing,
find
though.
Rapists right away.
It'd be much better than the current way where
wow.
they don't find them.
What a grim application
Sorry.
For the technology you immediately
That's a good
went
application
to.
For it.
No, it is a
you
good
know,
application.
That could just be rapists. It could be any criminal.
That's true. Good point.
Yeah, so there's that.
That's the kind of courtesy that Elliot shows all women.
Listen, I know women aren't just victims of
Sometimes
rape. They're victims of other crimes. theft, murder, assault.
Now, let's see.
Intellectual property rights.
Dog napping.
I mean, the woman isn't the victim there, the dog is.
Well, the woman's feelings are the victim. I mean, we don't know that the dog napper isn't treating that dog well.
Can I take this moment to bring up another problem I had?
Sure.
With the movie, with the film Whiteout?
Yeah, we should talk about Whiteout.
No, if I had another kind of problem, I'd just draw a face into rapistfind.com.
Wow. She has a name already. She's going to be approaching venture capitalists after the podcast.
It's called rapistfind.com. I think it's the next chat roulette. It's going to be really big.
Oh, man. Actually, that's probably a horrible porn site that I don't even... Ugh. Nobody look into it. Nobody type that into their computer.
Don't.
It's happening right now.
Oh, it's no, don't
well,
do
it's not
it.
Happening right now. It's happening in the future don't when people are it. Listening to us.
Well, right now for them.
Yeah.
God.
It's so weird that we're recording this now, and yet in a week when people listen to it, like we could all be dead.
Wow. You're grim, too.
Yeah, well, I had to I had to go to Amanda's level.
I'm trying to keep the spirits of this podcast up.
Nope.
Let's draw the faces of the people we think might murder us.
Who has wronged us over this past year.
So what was your problem with the movie Whiteout?
Okay, so there's this climactic fight.
Whiteout.
Stop it.
I told Dan that I liked picture Whiteout as a movie about an addiction to... liquid paper corrector starring Edie McClurg's character from Ferris Bueller.
That would be a great movie.
Whiteout. Ed. Oh, Ed.
We're all out of Whiteout.
We've got to order more.
Wow. Oh.
She's getting...
I've murdered someone with an ice axe.
Ooh, I shouldn't have done that.
That's a pretty, good either, yet obscure impression you've got there, Amanda.
You know, I had to do it. I don't want to brag to everybody on the internet, but I work in advertising. Oh, and
advertising.
One campaign I was working on
they're like, we need an Edie McClurg type.
Yes! I was like, but I was the one who said
that. It was
that.
For that cereal Clurgies?
It was...
Or Clurgos, I guess.
That Kevin Smith
in every box. In
that
every
Kevin
bite.
Smith movie, Clerks.
That's the kind of shoes that they wear in Holland.
Oh, you won't believe what just happened in the bathroom. But I wanted one of our talking sponges in our talking sponge campaign to sound like Edie McClurg, and I demonstrated the voice.
Nice
for a group of executives, and all I could say was, "It's a good Edie McClurg."
They could probably get Edie McClurg for that role.
That's what I was hoping.
The thing is, like, now Edie McClurg is listening to this podcast, and
she's
bemoaning the paycheck she missed out on.
I'm sorry, like, Edie.
Yeah, Edie's been a big fan of this podcast for a while. She never misses a cast.
Like, oh, I think the Flophouse is a righteous dude.
See, that's our next promo. We probably have to pay her. And the state of John Hughes, a lot of money for
probably.
That.
There's a state called John Hughes. When did we make John Hughes a state? We got 50 of them. We don't need a 50-verse. Puerto Rico's been waiting for so long. Give them a shot.
It's just outside of Chicago.
It's just one high school in Chicago.
And they're their own state. Yeah. Wow.
But wait, okay, anywho, so my problem.
With Edie McClurg.
So there's this big fight, and it's between...
Betwixt.
Three people in identical parkas in a thick coating of snow. So we don't know who is who. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't someone have been wearing
a red parka?
Like a red parka or like
a hat.
Like a hat or like a, you know, like a scarf that's blowing out behind them or like a, you know, how like a name tag on the back of
their
parka.
Give one of the men a beard.
Yeah, like that flows out over the parka.
Yeah, let's make it Santa.
It's like watching any fight scene in one of the Transformers movies. You're like, well, there are two robots fighting. I don't know which one is which or why I should care.
Yeah.
But it sure is happening. The other problem with all the fight scenes is, like, they all take place along one of these ropes.
Guide ropes.
These guide ropes, which is, it could be cool if it was done differently, but...
Yeah, well.
I just kept watching it thinking, like, okay, well... All of these buildings like are close enough to each other that I feel like if you were in a life or death situation, you would let go of the rope. You wouldn't take the time to actually buckle yourself to the rope.
But if you let go of the rope, you get blown away.
Oh, yeah,
in the
whiteout.
You were supposed to do the...
Wow, Whiteout. Do, 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 do. I don't want to work. I just want to bang on the... That's how it goes, right?
I don't think so.
Three songs.
Do, 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 do. R-O-C-K in the USA. I haven't said that one in a while.
Okay.
That was my catchphrase briefly. Mm-hmm. By briefly, I mean for about 7 months.
Everyone was saying it. All the Flophouse, the Flophouse message boards lit up with people quoting
the Flophouse talking dolls that we released. Mine said that. Yours said, you pulled the string and went, mm-hmm. And when you pulled Stuart's string, it was his penis.
Wow. And he said, watch it, dude.
Something like that, yeah.
Yep. So, if you want to buy one of those Flophouse talking dolls...
If you want to buy one of those...
Manufacture it.
And then sell it to yourself. Give us a cut.
I hate talking dolls where you pull the string and then you realize it's Stuart's penis.
That's the way it works.
Like, you should be able to figure that out before you pull
it. The least the doll can do is be up front with you.
I know.
It reminds me of the heyday of, for some reason, of Freddy Krueger, when there was a Freddy Krueger talking doll for children. And no one seemed to think that the character of a hideously disfigured child molester who murders children might not be the best character to make a talking doll for 7-year-olds.
What did he say?
It was like, sweet dreams, you know, and like, Freddy's here, you know.
And I'm going to molest you.
I'm a victim of mob justice.
I had a temp job once. Where I worked
at Freddy's office.
Yes, wow, that was the worst.
Awkward,
collating dreams.
collating dreams. That's the next Oprah's book quote. Anyway,
what was the temp job?
I was working at Discovery Toys, but I was working like for the people who decided which toys the Discovery Channel would be selling or whatever. Mm. Wow. And so they had a closet of all their Steve Irwin dolls. This was before he died.
Oh, okay.
And they were like, Amanda, we need you, we don't know what we have, so we need you to go into the closet and like press the button on each and every Steve Irwin doll and catalog what they're saying. I was like, so I just had to go into this closet by myself and like, good day, mate. Ah, that's a feisty Sheila. Just, you know.
Wow.
Yep.
That is
writing
the most
it down.
Amazing job I've ever heard of.
That sounds great.
Yep.
And I wouldn't
no
do that
time,
if I were you.
Not one time did I pull something and find out it was Steve Irwin's penis.
Well, that's good.
Not one time.
I just imagine the one, you press dozens of Steve Irwin dolls that are normal and one that's possessed by a killer spirit. And it says crazy, scary things, but then you're like,
watch out for stingrays.
Yeah, just
move
on.
Oh, Steve Irwin doll.
Oh.
Sorry.
How prescient.
Yep.
Yep. So, guys.
When you said Steve Irwin doll, what I thought at first was Steve Urkel doll. I was like, why did Discovery Channel have all these Steve Urkel dolls?
Well, he made the Urkelbot.
That's mm-hmm. true. And the jetpack,
mm-hmm.
the miniaturization ray, the time machine.
He was quite an amazing scientist.
Yeah, the machine that turned him into Stefan Urkel, the cool version. He was a very good scientist.
Yeah, he was way ahead of any technology we actually have today.
If only he could have turned his studies to curing cancer as opposed to building a robot of himself that could work at a convenience store.
Did he have that realization and look within and say, did I do that?
Elliot, necessity is the mother of invention.
No, Frank Zappa is the mother of invention.
Well, I learned something new. So,
you're saying, wait, that he needed a robot of himself.
He needed someone to cover a shift.
Oh, because I can't imagine, like, Urkel is in the lab and he goes, at last, another one of perfect beauty like me.
If he was diagnosed with
my perfect form reproduced in metal.
If he was diagnosed with a terrible disease, he would have probably cured it. That's how we could have saved things, if we could have found some way of giving
Urkel
a disease.
Yeah.
I think this discussion would have been more pertinent if we had watched Surrogates.
Yeah, we should have watched Surrogates. Less snow.
All right, well, I think it's time to put a cap on this discussion of Whiteout. And give our
cap on the Whiteout, I get it.
Yeah, because that's the thing you put on the bottle of the thing.
Whiteout.
And do our final judgments on
do,
it
do, 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 do,
very quickly, because I don't think we have much to say. But the categories, as always, are, was this a good bad movie, a bad movie, or a movie that you actually kind of liked in some way? Amanda, go.
Oh, my God. Terrible.
It was terrible.
I thought this movie was boring and terrible. And they should have marketed it as a movie about diamonds. Mm-hmm. And then
a sequel to Blood Diamond.
Yes, Snow Diamonds.
Really cold leg diamonds.
It's a sequel to Blood Diamonds and Snow Dogs.
They pull a bag of diamonds out of someone's leg, and at no point do we yell out "Legs Diamonds."
That's a good point.
Oh, do over.
We better watch the movie again.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
I have it for 24 hours, guys. So.
Oh, good.
Oh, that is 24 hours too much.
Elliot,
I would call it a bad movie. I think this was for me, I think, the most boring movie we've watched. More than 10,000 BC or 7 Pounds, which I actually had less trouble watching than you guys did. But
right. Early on, when I was watching this movie, I'm like, hey, you know what? This might not be so bad. It's got Tom Skerritt in it. I don't think that Kate Beckinsale has like good choices in movies, but she's certainly a very pretty woman. A good looking,
and it opened with her stripping down to her underpants.
So. Yeah, that was a good
sports
sign.
Bra.
Well, but that's very the... very small briefs though.
She was very fetching in her panties and sports bra.
that should be a greeting card. You were very fetching in your panties and sports bra. But and the premise,
happy
I
first
thought...
communion. Is that inappropriate?
If you ever get that card,
you the way
run.
Of the Gentiles, Elliot. No,
I assume that's something that old people do.
So, yeah, but the premise too, not bad. You know, like someone is going to have to solve a murder at Antarctica.
The idea of a murder on Antarctica is not bad, but everything else is terrible.
But yeah, but then the movie slowed way down, and all the mystery were solved way too quickly, and it was just boring.
It felt like watching a particularly bad point-and-click video game, where it's like, uh-oh, now you have to go to the other base. Fly there. You found an object. Mm-hmm. It's an ice axe. You know. Yeah. What will you do with it? Use on door, you know, and stuff like that.
Maybe you've discovered the way that they can make back a little money on this property, the Whiteout
adventure game. Hey, remember that movie no one liked from a couple years ago? Well, now here's a video game based on it.
They can go back in time and get Sierra to put it out.
Except in every scene in the video game, Kate Beckinsale would be in her panties and sports bra.
Oh, of course.
For no reason.
No, for very good
And she'd
reason.
Have all of her fingers. Probably.
Yeah, well, maybe like if you make a wrong choice, you lose the fingers. there is something ballsy about a movie starring a beautiful woman where at a certain point she loses two of her fingers and they're just gone. Like, they don't come back, you know. But there's also something...
she has no lizard DNA.
She's not Kurt Connors, yeah. But it's still not. It doesn't make it a good movie. It's just an interesting choice for them to go through with.
Well, that was by far the most effective scene when she had to have her fingers amputated.
Yeah.
So I guess watch that scene.
We know what Dan likes in movies is women in their underpants and women getting their fingers cut off.
I'm the guy from Saw. Anyway, so we have one letter to read.
Just one. I like letters.
Yeah, this is from my internet love, Ashley, a woman who wrote in to reassure me that you and Stuart weren't the only
flop studs. Oh, that's very nice.
This is an entry in my Give Dan a Hook contest.
Oh, okay.
It says, hook enclosed. Dan, how is there even a question of your hook? Obviously, it's those mournful sighs.
Funny, because it's true. Keep going.
Just like you said about my doll, my Flophouse doll. When Stuart says something grotesque, when you're trying to get the conversation back on track, or just when the full realization of how terrible a movie was sets in, it's trademark Dan. Don't fight it. Embrace it. It's either that or conduct all future podcasts as Michael Caine.
So. I could see that. So you're Dan McCoy sigh guy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, let's hear one.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's pretty good. I really believed you were unhappy with your life and the way it's going.
Well, it's a constant baseline of displeasure that I'm able to draw on. It's like a superpower.
Yeah. You really, the size are a part of you. Like, if you were a Broadway show, you'd be Miss Saigon.
Oh, God. You're just trying to draw them out of me now.
I think Dan should be a psychiatrist.
Yeah, that's pretty good. If he was a singer at Jabba the Hutt's Barge, he would be Cy Snoodles.
Keep them coming. Come on.
If Iwe was a movie of a retro-futuristic film, it would be Cy Captain in the World of Tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Good, mm-hmm. Good.
If he was going to measure earthquakes, he would just be a seismologist.
Yeah.
I didn't really bring a lot to that one. I'm sorry.
If he was from what the ancient Romans called Gaul, he would be a packet of French size instead of French fries.
All right. So...
And if he was a pig, he would live in a pigsty.
Well, that was a whole lot of nothing. Anyway, let's move on. I appreciate the hook, though, even though it makes me out to be even sadder than before. Let's move on to the final.
So is that hook contest still open?
Well, we haven't talked about how we're going to decide the winner, so I guess it is by default. Here's a terrible truth about the Flophouse. We don't discuss the mechanics of these things off the air because we forget to.
Yep. Well, we're busy people.
Mm-hmm.
Me with my Emmy-winning career and you guys with whatever it is you do.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Then my new hook is I'm a jerk.
Name-dropping jerk.
Yeah.
I dropped the name of an award.
I know. But earlier, before when we were not recording, you mentioned Anne Hathaway.
No, I didn't, though. Dan mentioned her as if
best friends.
No, not at all. Barely know her.
Okay.
Not gonna drop names.
Okay.
Not that name anyway.
Yeah, but I think that we should keep it open one more round, just because we haven't figured that out entirely. And if
would that be 7 rounds or 12 rounds, like the movie 12 Rounds?
I want a hook. If I had a hook on the show, it would be that
you're a girl.
I live nearby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're ready.
And I am available at the last minute. I conveniently live very close to Dan.
No, you know...
No, you don't figure it out.
Okay. I was going to, for the benefit of the audience who doesn't know you, you're a stand-up of many years, and you've written...
I'm an old stand-up. Yeah. I'm a really wizened...
Shriveled old lady.
Yes.
And you've written for various television programs.
You can't say, like, but the jokes she tells come
Sid
out of
Caesar.
A mat of wrinkles.
Sure. I wrote for Sid Caesar.
Yeah, wrote for Burns and Allen.
Listen, Cy and the Family Stone. I just wanted to get that one out.
Cy and the Family Stone, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Cyclops?
Yeah, well, you're the Cyclops of the group. Kind of boring, the leader. Holds it all together, but no one likes him. He's no one's favorite.
Really? Is that what Cyclops is known for? I thought it was just
yes.
The one eye thing.
No, he is known for being the X-Man no one cares that much about.
Oh.
He's the Leonardo of the group, as we always say. Another one, everyone's least favorite Ninja Turtle.
Gotcha.
The Luke Skywalker, if you will.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Mm.
All right, mm-hmm. So let's move on.
You're the
on.
James Madison of the group, if we were the founding fathers. Very important, but no one
very
really cares
short.
For him.
So let's move on to the final segment of the show, which is where we recommend things that we actually liked.
Impossible.
In order to take the bitter taste of failure out of all of your mouths. So, I'll start for once. I saw the movie In the Loop recently, which is...
I'd like to see that.
Not a movie that I feel like needs my critical support, because it is a Oscar-nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay film, and it was on a lot of 10 Best of the Year lists, but it's extremely funny. And it also... For the first, like, half of the movie, it's one of the funniest comedies I've seen in years. Then, for, like, the next quarter, it turns into almost like a political thriller. And then it's just devastatingly depressing while still being funny. But it's one of these movies where I had it from Netflix, and I sort of immediately wished I owned it, because the density of jokes in it is so great. And many of them are just sort of thrown away and tossed off. And you could rewatch it, I feel like, multiple times and still get a lot out of it.
Hmm.
So that's my recommendation.
Good. I'd like to see that movie.
Amanda, yeah. Do you have anything racked up?
Oh, yeah. I recently rented Coco Before Chanel.
Mm.
Which I would recommend. It's the story of Coco Chanel.
Is that the one with Audrey Tautou? Or is that someone else?
Audrey Tautou is adorable. And pretty much everyone could just look at her for a couple hours. And it's just, it just so happens that while you're looking at her, she's acting out the story of Coco Chanel.
She's not just lying around reading a magazine and cooking an egg.
Part of the time she is, but it's Coco Chanel reading a magazine.
Ah, I see.
And I recommend it, even though I'm not sure if it's pronounced biopic or biopic. Is it just go ahead? Is
I say biopic. I say biopic, but other people say biopic.
Okay.
Biopic sounds to me like myopic.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds like there's two opics.
Yeah, two opics, exactly. Whereas biopic, it's like, oh, it's a moving picture that's a biography.
Because you don't say, well, no.
You do say that.
I was trying
Ladies
to say.
Ladies and gentlemen, Amanda's having an argument with herself inside her own brain.
It's just, you know, like a movie identity.
That really plays well over the internet radio.
Yeah.
Internal conversations.
Quiet does.
That's sort of the whiteout of radio commentary.
It makes the listener lean in as if they can hear your thoughts.
And turn the volume up because they think it's broken.
What is it? What happened to Amanda? She's their neighbor. I don't know. She's very old.
Nice that they let that old neighbor join them.
That'll be the next contest. Solve the mystery of what happened to Amanda.
She was about to recommend Coco before Chanel, and then
the lights went out. And when they turned on again, she was gone.
She was found sewn inside a dead body's calf. That's how small I am. Mm-hmm. I didn't mention
that. Oh, yeah, she's also tiny. She's like a gnome.
an old neighborly gnome.
So, anyway, Elliot.
I think I will make this an international recommendations session. Your movie's from England, right? Mm-hmm. And Coco Before Chanel is a French film, right?
Oh, yes. It's in French. I forgot to mention.
And has anyone recommended Thirst on the show yet?
No.
I don't think so. I saw recently Thirst, Chan-Wook Park's vampire film, which I didn't think was perfect. It's a little too long, and it kind of takes a while to get where it's going. But there's a lot of really good scenes to it. And it's almost less of a vampire horror movie than a kind of weird film noir involving vampire powers. Like, it's much more a story about a man who falls afoul of a femme fatale, and he happens to be a vampire and she wants to become one, than it is, you know, about, you know, like Twilight type stuff. But there are a lot of really good gross scenes in it, and I liked the ending of it a lot. And while it wasn't my favorite of his films, he also did like Old Boy and Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Lady Vengeance. I thought it was an interesting twist on the normal vampires stuff.
Well, I literally have that in a Netflix envelope on my shelf right now, so I will look forward to watching that.
I'll be interested to see what you think of it afterwards.
I've been putting it off because I haven't had enough time to sit down and pay attention to something that has subtitles where I actually have to look at the screen for the full movie.
Yeah, it's over 2 hours too, which is it's a little long, but there's some good blood scenes and things like that.
All right, good blood scenes.
Oh.
I know Amanda likes that.
Yeah, fewer of those in Coco Before Chanel.
But there's still some. I mean, like, it reveals how Chanel used to kidnap people and put them in a torture chamber and make them make hard decisions. You know?
Well, she's like Lady Bathory. Like, that's how, that's how her cosmetics keep people young.
Mm-hmm. The Blood of Virgins. The Blood of Virgins. So, like in that movie that, it was an Uwe Boll movie, right?
Uwe Boll.
Was it called, like, Blood Rain or something?
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot like that.
Bloodbath?
She uses the blood of virgins to make tasteful suits.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's very nice. And little dresses, right?
Yeah.
And
so forth.
Murder.
Yeah. Well, guys, we got to wrap it up on that sort of weak, desultory note. But
jeez.
The ever confident Dan McCoy.
Well, thanks a lot.
Sigh us out of this one, huh?
Yeah.
We're running out of time.
Sigh Masterson.
Nice. There you go. You saved it at the last minute. Good work.
Barely.
So, for the Flophouse, I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Amanda Melson.
And I will continue to be Elliot Kalin.
Good night. In three,
Like, he says, in three. And instead of saying two, takes a sip of water. You have to wait for those numbers, I guess.
You know who never gets to do the countdown? Is Kate Beckinsale's character.
No. Oh, she can count down from three.
Two. One.